Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We checked the calendar, and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
Wow. Wow, wow. The opening weekend is here. Look at that jersey. Beautiful, beautiful jersey there, Brando. Opening weekend has come and gone. Baseball season is in full swing. And the Yankees and Dodgers are just torpedoing the competition, Brandon.
What is that about, dude?
Torpedoing the competition. I'm back. I'm kidding. We're back. It's a deferred collusion. It's me, Jesse, with Brandon Bollinger, the Prince of the South Bay.
That's right, dude. You used to be the king. Now I'm the prince.
Yeah, been demoted.
I don't know if that's an insult. Oh man, Jesse, the relentless row. How are you, big daddy? The dog father, the content king, that scumbag pap that I hold so dear in my heart. Hey, Crespi's own Jesse Rowe. It's so good to be back. Deferred collusion. We did it, dude. Baseball's back. We are through the opening series, the opening weekend, and it was filled with fireworks, pageantry, fucking diamond rings, daddy-o. We got them. Wanted them. It was beautiful. And guess what, dude? There's plenty of baseball drama dripping from the seams of those sliders just getting spun out across the league.
It's a juicy gorgeous one. It's a juicy one today. It is a juicy, spicy meatball today.
Spider tack me, dude. It's sticking to me. It's sticking to me so good. But before we get into it, deferred collusion. It's a pleasure to be back. If you are enjoying what we're doing, please
like,
subscribe, tell a friend, send it to somebody, leave a comment, whatever you want to do, engage with us. It means the world. And sincerely, the subs help so much. Getting close to a number I didn't think we'd ever hit on YouTube when we first started this. So it's getting pretty cool. Looking at it, 4 digits, dude. That's not a lot to most, but damn it, it's something to us. So thank you so much for hanging with us. But the fact that
we get like 10 people listening to this was exciting enough. The fact that we almost have 1,000, kind of crazy. 1,000 people are interested in hearing what we have to say about the Dodgers. Thank you, guys.
Love it. And baseball in general and life, I think, too.
No, that's true. But either way, baseball is here, and we the Dodgers, they might never lose this season, Brandon, because they have looked pretty unbeatable to start this season. And you know, if there was any doubts about the roster the Dodgers put together going into it, well, it certainly seems like they're capable of overcoming any one of those doubts, because just unbelievable. Couldn't have been scripted any better for the opening weekend at Dodger Stadium. Getting the ring ceremony, having Jack Flaherty in town, you know, the comeback win. We're going to break that down. But just overall, you were there, game 3, so we'll talk a bit about that. But what was your biggest takeaway of the weekend, your favorite moment? Just where are you at emotionally with this team after one weekend?
Jess, so far I'm in love with the surprise fight in this dog that is the 2025 Los Angeles Dodgers. From Mookie shoving it down our prediction throat of saying, hey, don't expect him for the first two series. He comes out with what I think like four extra base hits, a double, a couple like of home runs, including
15 pounds underweight, by the way.
Dude, yeah. Guy looks like a freshman sophomore, and he's just out there roping balls, just going like, oh no, it's about like preparation. It's about, you know, contact. It's about just doing it right, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about baseball. It's a humbling game, but damn, when you're locked in, something special happens, and it's cool to see him off to a hot start. Speaking of other hot starts, there were some guys that had some less hot starts. Most notably, in game one, Blake Snell was having some control issues and the walk bug came to bit him and gave up an early lead. Nothing too dramatic. And then more notably in game three, Roky, only getting five outs, getting pulled in the second inning, pinch count around 61, I believe, when he was pulled, only half of those for strikes. Jess, I know we're kind of jumping all the way straight into game three, but this was what I think was the most, impactful takeaway of the game. After being pulled from game three, I didn't notice this until after the game. As I was there, like you said, Sunday, Saturday. But Roky seemed emotional on the broadcast. I don't know if that was on like all the American broadcasts, because I only heard it with like Japanese speaking in the back. So I don't know if that was Japanese broadcast, whatever. But it appeared that Roky had a little water under his eyes, and was a bit emotional. And I saw him getting just kind of ripped apart online. And there wasn't a majority, I think, people kind of defending him, most notably bringing up his tragic past with, you know, what happened with,
family.
But, you know, the kid has high expectations of himself and is a professional and is only 23 years old and I'm sure is pretty much pretty feeling alone out there on that hill, just not being able to dial it in. And Jess, I was there, pretty good field level seats. Don't mind me. Oops. But he just seemed like he was a little juiced. But Jess, what was freaking me out a little bit, I don't know if you were noticing this when you were watching, but his velocity was down. His fastball was hitting like 95, 96. So it made me think maybe he was trying to do too much, trying to be too perfect with his pitches, trying to land everything instead of maybe just letting it eat. I don't know. I got to go back and rewatch a little bit more of his start. But Jess, what was standing out to you about that Roky performance?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's like you look at it in a vacuum and you see his first two games to start his pro career. He's had a lot of trouble with control, but then you look at like the spring start that he had against the Reds, where he just was electric. He was throwing that splitter for strikes. Mm-hmm. It seems like nerves were a big part of this, especially his first game in Dodger Stadium. And the first game was also in Japan, you know, so there's like a lot of pressure in his first two games as a professional. So like, I'm going to look at it as objectively as I can and just like attribute it to that. You know, this is a hard game, dude. Baseball is very fucking hard. And if you can't throw strikes, to me, that's more, there's positives to take from that because it's self-inflicted. It's not like, it's not like he was getting lit up by the opposition. They just weren't swinging at his pitches. They were very patient with him, which means he did it to himself a little bit. But yeah, there's a little stat about that, about his control, because it's kind of crazy when you think about it. He only recorded five outs before being pulled. That's what you said. So 61 pitches, 32 were strikes. Whereas in his previous start, he threw 56 pitches and only 25 were strikes. Hmm. So he has really struggled with that. And I know you sort of mentioned it, but the reason why I bring it up, I am concerned about the velocity a little bit, about why there was such a drop from his first start to his second one. But I think overall, just his first couple of games, and you mentioned the people that were ripping him online, there are so many people that are just like looking for something to be excited about for like that doesn't work out for the Dodgers. So they're all going to celebrate this, and we're going to forget about it in a few months. So
yeah. For you, Jess, on a scale of 1 to 5, I don't think we need to bring 10 all the way into this, but on a scale of 1 to 5, what's your concern meter with Roki right now?
It's
lowest, 5 being the highest.
It's very low. My concern would be more so, does he have an arm that's in need of some cleanup? Is more my concern than anything. I'm not concerned with like the statistics or the type of pitcher that we have. I believe that he could be one of the best pitchers in baseball. My concern in terms of his pitch mix is more so like he needs a third pitch, because if you're just throwing fastball splitter, no matter how good those pitches are, this is the major leagues hitters. You know, they can just sit fastball, react, breaking ball, right?
Yeah, and that's too easy.
Yeah,
and the truth of the matter, to your point, is, you know, what do we call a pitcher with two pitches? You know, a reliever.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and that's I don't see that happening, but I do see them working with him on trying to mix in a new pitch, like something that he can throw 10% of the time, right? Something just to make you think about as a hitter. Maybe that's a cutter. You know, maybe they work on a cutter with him, which would make a lot of sense. But I liked a point that you made about the fight that the Dodgers had, because I do think that's true. They played hungry in these first two series. They did not look like a team. There's no hangover at all. They look like they are just as motivated as ever before going into the season. I mean, just game two alone, the comeback, I never once doubted that they were going to come back in that game. You know, when they went down 5-3, I just thought, oh, okay, like they'll make this interesting. Even if they lose, they'll make it interesting, because it just seems like that's the way you're going to have to beat this team. I don't foresee a lot of blowout losses for this team. I foresee that if they do lose, it'll either be like a blowout loss where they just like throw in a position player to eat some innings, or they're going to lose, you know, a lot of tough, like one run games.
Yeah.
And they're just always going to be in it, because that's who they are. And their fight was very noticeable. Obviously, the Mookie walk-off home run was a great way to cap off the ring ceremony night. His reaction, though, when he did it, it was like he was so fucking fired up. I don't know if that was like some like personal stuff for him, just like overcoming getting sick, the frustration with that, and like just him like, okay, no, I feel good again. Maybe like there was some of that in there.
Yeah, it was like his Jordan flu game, kind of, you know what I mean?
But it also just felt like he was, like, he's just, like, hungry to do this again. Like, they're just as motivated as ever, and that was very noticeable. They look like champion. They look like a defending champion.
I couldn't agree more. It's been really impressive, dude. You know, Mookie has that two-homer night. He has a double in that game. Completely outshining Yamamoto's 10 Ks. I mean, he did give up a home run to Dylan Diggler, the Detroit catcher. That was only the second home run of Diggler's career, which is, okay, I think it's one of those you tip your cat and you go, ah, I left a hanging breaking ball like I wanted that splitter down. Good for you for not missing it. But Yamamoto, I think, is looking every bit like the actual ace that we knew we were signing into that 12-year deal last year. It really looks like he's taking a step forward into becoming a professional pitcher. Whereas, you know, on the flip side of that, Roki is a raw talent being forged into a professional pitcher. And we're going to see that growth over the next couple years.
And Yamamoto didn't have his best stuff either. And that's crazy to say for a guy that had 10 strikeouts, but he was struggling with his command a little bit too. He threw 91 pitches in 5 innings, so his pitch count was a little high. But I think he's just, like you said, he's just learning how to be like an ace. And it's you find a way to you know, to win when you don't have your best stuff, which is something that I think he struggled with last year. He sort of maybe imploded a little bit, had some like mental gaffes on the mound, and he looks in control. And I think he's really sort of solidified himself as the ace of the staff for the time being. Ring ceremony was pretty cool.
Super rad, dude. Super rad. There's some huge pops, dude. That freaking Kike pop was incredible. I mean, dude, Doc got a huge pop. You know, he has won this city back over, dude.
Dude, that's the most noticeable thing is how fired up the crowd was for Dave Roberts. This is a fan base that has been so divided on this guy for years. Like, half people calling for his head, half swearing by him. I'm one of the loyal ones. I stood by him the whole fucking time. I mean, he might have gotten the biggest pop of them all, Brandon. Like, genuinely.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I know offhand that his winning percentage is around 63%. It was like 627, I think, is his winning percentage. But, you know, basically he's winning 63% of his games. He's won over 600 or something championships. Or excuse me, he's won over 600 and something regular season games. He's now got two championships, which is as many as Tommy had. Jess, I was talking to you about this a little bit. Like, do you think that Dave Roberts right now, has he done enough to be a first ballot Hall of Famer when he becomes eligible? If his career just ended today.
As a manager? Yeah. I mean, he has two championships and he's one of the winningest managers of all time. So yeah. I don't think there's any doubt. Now, obviously the big count against him is, losing in two World Series, but also,
losing in one cheated.
Sure. I know.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
But also, you were gifted this incredible, array of talent, basically. Like, anybody could, a fucking monkey could do that job sort of thing, is what a lot of people would say. But I don't think that's true. I think that you dealing with egos in sports is one of the toughest jobs in the world, dude. That's one of the toughest jobs in the world.
Totally.
So,
Jess, just to play devil's advocate to your point, though, you could say that about the Phillies. You know, that's a damn near – murderer's row of a lineup. They made it to the World Series and lost to the Astros a couple years ago and haven't been back since. The Padres have had a cavalcade of, first ballot future Hall of Famers in Juan Soto, Manny Machado. Tatis has got a way to go, but it looks like he's going to, maybe make that list one day too. Ringworm cream notwithstanding. But my point is, there's plenty of managers out there that have had a superstar lineup. I mean, look at the Mets. I'm just saying some of this turnover for stellar teams, stellar lineups has been great, Who won 107 games with the Giants a couple years ago? Was it Gabe Kapler?
I think, it was Gabe Kapler, yeah.
And he's out of – I don't think he's even coaching.
He's out of a job now, yeah.
Out of a job,
He's like, I don't know what he's doing, but I get your point. And it the fact that it's consistency, that there was that a down year for the Dodgers was still winning the division every single year with Dave Roberts. You know, the only time he didn't was because the Giants had that fluke 107 win season, and it's they haven't been able to do it since. It just goes to show he's a stable captain of the ship, and I'm super happy that he's finally getting that love. I do want to give some love here to one, because my biggest takeaway from the series was there were three guys out of the bullpen that were just phenomenal, because Tanner Scott got roughed up a little bit. Trinan didn't look super sharp, I think Vesia got clipped as well. So I think some of the bigger names have, a little bit off to a slower start, but Ben Kasparis Anthony Banda, and Kirby Yates. All three of those guys have three scoreless innings. Listen to this. Kirby Yates, three innings pitched, seven strikeouts, 15 swings and misses.
Wow.
And those three outings. Ben Kasparius, three innings, zero runs. Anthony Banda, three innings, zero base runners, and five strikeouts.
And let me just say, I was there on Saturday. The pop that Anthony Banda got, and you know what? This is a baseball game, right? You're expecting it to be like a roar of the crowd. It was a huge pop, but you can tell it was the ladies screaming for Banda. Okay. And wow. It was noticeable to where me and my wife looked at each other like, damn, dude. And I,
Anthony.
Well, to be fair, I thought we were going to say, I mean, I said that, but she was also yelling for Banda. And I was like, whoa.
Okay. Well, that's we got to have a conversation about that one.
Actually, I'm sleeping on the couch. It's actually pretty bad. No, dude. I'm joking.
You say that, and I immediately, for about Banda, and I immediately think of that Shaquille O'Neal meme where it's like, I'm sorry, I wasn't familiar with your game. That's me right now.
Exactly.
I wasn't familiar with Anthony Banda's game. I can definitely see it. Yeah.
We talked that if he got off to a slow start, that it could be challenging for the Dodgers to find a place for him with so many arms in the waiting and some guys that have more options, etc., more flexibility. Banda could potentially, if, you know, got off to a slow start, be a juicy trade piece for a team in a midseason acquisition. I think that's almost already certainly out the window, just the way he looked in Tokyo and now in this first home opener series.
Well,
he has been nails.
Also, just think about that three-headed lefty monster. I think I've mentioned it on previous episode, but Banda, Vesia, and Tanner Scott, that's such different arm angles, different velocities, different pitch mixes. It's a perfect three-headed monster for like whatever lefty you're going to face. That both all of those guys pitch pretty well against righties too. Which is key for, you know, the three batter minimum rule in the playoffs and everything. So I don't think Banda's going anywhere. I think he's actually elevating himself into a potential high leverage role. And you know who he is right now? He's this team's version of Victor Gonzalez.
Ooh.
Yeah, Victor Gonzalez, he got the love of Dodger fans, but we really needed him to get some big outs against lefties in the playoffs. He's taken that role, and I think he's better.
I agree. I think that's a great comp. And you know what? That kind of clutch factor from that World Series run kind of mirrors each other. You know what I mean?
Were the women who were cheering for Banda, were they Latinas? Primarily Latinas?
I'll be honest with you. I didn't go around checking. But...
Okay. So you weren't scoping around. What ethnicity are these women that are cheering right now?
No, Jesse, I was not looking around at other women while I was sitting next to my wife at the other game, sir. You're trying to get me... Beat up, dude. I ain't falling for it, dude. I ain't falling for your 1-2 katsu. Yeah.
Just curious. I'm looking at a photo of him, and I'm like, all right, I'm just trying to think of, like, who's his type? Like, who does he – what type of woman does he attract?
You gotta ask Michaela, dude, if he floats her boat. You know what I mean?
You guys both, though, got the mustaches. You're both mustache crew.
That is true. It feels nice. You know, sometimes you worry about if it's being – we'll talk about this later. Anyways, baseball.
Jack Flaherty got a nice little first. He got an ovation from the fans after he got pulled. He got pulled from the game, I believe, and the fans gave him some love.
Yeah, they gave him some love, which was really cool. He had a shutout going through four innings. I believe Freddie is who broke it open with a two-run bomb to tie the game after a Teoscar Hernandez walk. It looked pretty fun, pretty playful. I think I saw Jack throwing bubblegum at Freddie and Freddie just having a laugh about it. So you can see that there's obviously a ton of love. That was evident at the game three when they gifted Jack his ring
and a jersey.
His golden player's jersey and hat. Everybody from damn Mookie and Shohei to Ben Kasparis was out there to give him some love. It was cool to see Trinan give him his hat, you know, his bullpen leader.
Dude, here's that World Series with, I mean, like getting there. We remember, Like, we didn't even have Yamamoto for a bit in the regular season. The Dodgers were depleted. That Jack Flaherty trade was, like, so crucial for that team because he was basically our only, like, ace, if you want to call him that, for, like, a good, like, month of the season at the end before Yamamoto came back. And, I mean, he was really a godsend. And I think that that team, you could just tell how much they really appreciated him. But I also could just see in Jack Flaherty's face, like, how sad and disappointed that he is that he's a Detroit Tiger right now. he looks really fucking bummed about it, dude. Really.
Well, I will say this. I got to give a shout out to the Tigers. Super sick road unis. I think some of the best.
I love the Tigers uniforms, dude. Yeah.
Super rad. Saw a bunch of their fans out there. Detroit was well represented at Dodger Stadium. Got to give that a shout out. Another big shout out, Spencer Torkelson, dude, was ripping the fucking cover off the ball.
Yeah.
Zach McKinstry, former Dodger, had a triple. Seemed like he was getting a base knock every time he was up. Riley Green also mashing. So just to give a tip of the cap to those guys, the Tigers look like they're going to be fucking pesky, dude.
Got swept, but I think that, like, when you look at them, I actually think that they looked pretty good in that in defeat. I think that they look pretty solid. I'm a little concerned about their pitching. We had a Kenta Maeda sighting. I don't want to spend too much time on the Tigers, but I love Kenta Maeda, but he should retire. He looked pretty washed up to me, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, and it sucks because we're just a couple years removed from him, like, getting fucking Cy Young votes. You know?
Yeah, the Twins.
Injury has really robbed him of his velo.
He's throwing like 89, 90, like flat sliders, Tanks. Yeah,
dude. His, like, fastball was sitting around 90, and his, like, sliders, like, it was like 83, and I just
Looked like batting practice at one. It was just like like competitive batting practice. He just didn't look like he had there was just not much on his pitches, you know. There's nothing.
He still looks like, you know, he's got that pro pitcher mind and eye, but it's just, you know, when you can't get your body to make the ball do what you want to do, the results are kind of sad.
Sucks, because,
you know, I love him. He should be a World Series champion. He got cheated. But,
he got cheated big time in that game 5, by the way. Remember, he gave up that 3-run homer to Altuve that, when the Dodgers went up 7-4 in game 5, gives up that 3-run homer to Altuve. Like, sorry, bro, you got fucking cheated in that game. All love to Kenta Maeda. Note here. Well, first, Tommy Edman is the biggest power hitter on the Dodgers, dude. 3 home runs in his first 5 games of the season. Crazy. Living up to the Tommy Tanks moniker. I mean, this is like the pickup of all pickups for this team. What a difference he's made for the dynamic of this lineup, and he's clearly benefiting from how much protection he has in that lineup. He's hitting in the two. He could hit leadoff. He could hit eighth. He could hit fourth or fifth. He's all over the lineup. Doesn't have a set place. Doesn't have a set position. But he just continues to fucking rake the ball, dude. And he's 3 home runs, leading the Dodgers right now. This guy is. I don't know what else to say other than he's my favorite player on the team right now.
It is hard not to love him, right? Stanford kid, played in Korea, you know, won a gold glove with the Cardinals. Was it a platinum glove? I don't even know.
Got traded and wanted to stay with us too. That counts for something with me. You know what I mean? Like, got traded here and wanted to stay. So.
Yeah, my wife is a big fan of Tommy Tanks because he is married to a Filipina woman.
Right, yeah.
I always go. They all sing together. So anyways, my wife's like, yeah, dude, one of us. Anyways, it's pretty funny. But Tommy Tanks is insane, and I'll be honest, man. I would be talking more about his offense, but I got to talk about his glove. He pretty much single-handedly keeps us in game 2. To let Mookie have that, you know, magic moment, that walk-off. He made a couple plays this series from second base on the shortstop side of the bag and still had enough juice to not even, like, hop the ball to first, just nail it over there, get some crucial outs. It's been insane. Had that relay to home to get Margot out, where Barnes made that shoelace tag. whoa, we're fucking MLB commenters, haters, whatever, enjoying that one, just thinking that it was the Ohtani home run all over again. This is rigged, dude. The league's rigging it for the Dodgers. He was safe. And I'm like, dude, Manny Margot just loves tripping on his way to home. I just was having 2020 World Series flashbacks again. I'm like, this fucking guy, get the banana peels out of his way. My God, dude, Mario Kart him already. Fuck.
Yeah.
We love you, Manny Margot. Hey, Dodgers legend.
It's funny. That series was kind of like all of these Dodgers discards, the discard pile, like Trey Sweeney, Zach McKinstry, Manny Margot, Jack Flaherty. The list goes on and on and on. There was a lot of ex-Dodgers there in that series. I think Tommy Edman is just – he's just fit in perfectly, and I think he sets – he gives a team identity, I think. I think we have an identity on offense and on defense with him. A guy that's willing to make all the necessary sacrifices. A guy that just focuses on hitting the ball hard. He's not trying to be flashy. He's not trying to be above anybody else. And, makes contact, switch hitter, plays whatever position. He's just the epitome of what the Dodgers are trying to do. And,
scrappy, I think, is the way I would describe him. And not in like a guy punching above his weight, but a guy that strikes me as prepared. That's a guy that, doesn't, rise to meet the moment. He lets the moment come to him. He just seems calm. And just like you said, because of the protection in the lineup, knows that if you're going to pick your poison, you're going to go and try and get something past Tommy Tanks and blow the doors off him. But, he's a professional hitter, like I've been mentioning, and you got to see him three times. And if it's, plan is to not, tax your pen in the first game of the series or the second, or, by the third, he's going to have seen most of your pitches a few times and is going to strike and take advantage. And we saw that, with Kenta Maeda in game two as well. I think he had a big double or something like that. I can't think. I don't have the stats in front of
I want to read off a couple of stats here that are just super impressive, because over his career, he's a hard hit percentage of 32.2, meaning that he every time he makes contact, he hits the ball, what classifies as a hard hit ball, 33% of the time, basically. This year so far, in five games.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Is a 53% hard hit percentage. So he's just, he's barreling it every time right now. And he also is just, he's the king of productive at bats. Productive outs, productive at bats, great approach up there. Just nothing but good things to say about Tommy Edman. Love what I'm seeing from him right now.
Yeah. Just to buttress your point, my king, he's got a 667 slug and a 905 OPS right now. I mean, it's insane.
Oh, that's low OPS. Really? It's only, what's his batting at? Is his OBP pretty low? Is that why?
Yeah, his batting average is .238 and his OBP.
Yeah, okay, that's why. Got it. Yeah, I see that. Okay.
But hey, my man Mookie, 500 average with a .556 OBP, a .250 slug, and a .806 OPS. My God, he's off to a hot start. And then our boys Freddie with the 1.0 and Shohei 1.2 OPS, not far behind.
And by the way, Teoscar Hernandez is proving exactly why the Dodgers needed to re-sign him. Got the biggest hit of this series, arguably. He clipped, other than the Mookie homer, he clipped the reigning Cy Young winner in Game 1, Tarik Skubal. He got him in the fifth inning for a three-run homer when Skubal was looking pretty nasty, looking pretty on top of things. The Dodgers, though, man, even against Skubal, they just are so good at working counts and extending at bats. And they see so many pitches. And even Skubal only went five. Maybe it was the fourth inning that they clipped him. But so impressive how much they're making the pitchers work to start the year. It's the most noticeable thing about the offense.
Jesse, we got 6 guys on the lineup with an 875 OPS or higher right now. I know we're only 5 games into the season, but starting at the lowest, you got Michael Conforto, 286 average, 875 OPS. Will Smith, dude, to the tune of a 1.3 OPS and a 417 average. He's off to a hot start.
He's looked very good to start the year so far. And I know he was dealing with a foot injury too, so I think he's
It's good to see. It's good to see the health just going. I know it's a long season, but some really good, encouraging things. A couple of guys off to a slow start. Muncy, Rojas, although I don't think we expect much from him offensively. More noticeably, Páez has gotten off to a bit of a slow start.
Yeah.
His Ks are up right now. So maybe we'll see Ha-Seong Kim come out, dude. He's been raking in the minors lately.
Yeah, no, he's looked pretty good. Really quick, I just wanted to note, the Dodgers haven't worked the counts very well. I think Detroit did a really good job of keeping them in the strike zone, though.
I agree.
They only gave up 6 walks in 3 games. It was the Cubs. Against the Cubs, the Dodgers had something, I think it was like 15 walks in those 2 games. So kudos to Detroit. It seems like they really their Scooble's approach especially was clearly like, don't get behind in counts. He doesn't want to throw more than 4 pitches per at bat is what he says, apparently. So he's just trying to not throw any more than 4 pitches per at bat. So he was really going after guys, forcing the Dodgers to swing the bats. So just worth noting. Good kudos to the Tigers for throwing strikes.
Interesting game plan, Cotton. Let's see how it works out for them.
Well, they're 0-3, so not so good. But Ha-Seong Kim, 2 minor league games as of right now. He is in these 2 games. He's 2-for-7, but he does have a couple of walks and 2 extra base hits and a triple and a double. Looks good though. He had some good at bats, and I think he hit like a triple or something that got some play on a Dodgers social media, so it was worth mentioning. How soon do you think until Ha-Seong Kim gets the call up? It's obviously going to be like a few weeks because they're going to control time him. They're not going to start his clock too early, but how soon do you think we see him?
I think it really depends on how slow of a start Páez gets off to. It seems like they got the depth in the infield that they need, even with Kike kind of being on the mend. I know he was not available for this weekend series dealing with the same stomach virus that Mookie was dealing with, or at least something feeling similar. But to that point, man, I think it's going to depend really on Páez. And I know it's like, wait, isn't Kim a middle infielder? He can play some outfield. I think they would probably move Conforto over to center. Yeah, I know that sounds a little scary, but I think they would do that. Bring Kim up, let him get some playing time.
No, they would move Edmund to center, and then Kim would play second base.
You think so? Really? Yeah. I just felt like the opportunity for more consistent playing time may be in the outfield, so I thought maybe they might flex some of that flexibility while they still have a lot of options with them early on, see what the game looks like for them out there. But then again, you do make a good point, because if you're just trying to make a guy feel comfortable enough to produce offensively, put him into a position he's more familiar with.
You're not wrong though, because they're clearly if you want to get playing time on this team, you're going to sort of have to, find the spot that the team needs you for. And if that's playing some left field and Conforto moves over or something like that, you're right. That is definitely a possibility for him. I just don't know if he's got enough work in the outfield yet where they feel comfortable, because as of right now, I think he is just playing at second base in the minor leagues. I haven't looked at any box scores. So
yeah, and I know if some of our listeners might be thinking hey, what about James Outman? And I just don't think he's been producing in the minors offensively. No. And also, I got to double check. Maybe I'm wrong lately, but he hasn't really produced in the last couple of years at the dish. It's terrible, because he's a great defender, great head of hair too, wonderful lettuce. But
and he had a great, he was on top 10 outfielders list going into the 2024 season on a lot of different
people were calling him the next Cody Bellinger, after that,
or like the next year, exactly.
Love me
The point is Chris Taylor doesn't even have an at-bat this season yet. So I don't know where they're going to find playing time for Kim right away, to be honest. So my guess is like what you said, A, you know, let it play out a little bit, see how Pajes performs. B, where do we stand with the injury bug by the end of April? C, what do we got from CT? You know, how does he look when, you know, when he starts getting some run? And, you know, because they got Kike they got to put out there, you know, they're platooning. You know, Conforto's not going to play every day against lefties, so they're going to do a little bit of mixing and matching there. We'll see. My guess is we're not going to see Kim until end of April, early May. That's my
I agree. I would say early May. I think Pajes has earned a little leash for just great ABs in the postseason, a couple of big homers. I think they're going to give him the entirety of April to figure it out, unless he's god dog shit awful at the dish.
Yeah, agreed. But either way, perfect opening weekend and opening week for the Dodgers. 5-0, never going
to
lose.
Yeah, dude,
again.
It was cool, man. I went to Saturday's game, like we were saying, dude. And we got out there pretty early, you know, with my little girl. But dude, there was a line at the gate, you know, 2.5 hours before they opened up. It was pretty impressive. It was a huge mix of people, very ethnically diverse, very much like Los Angeles, but tons of family. Like I was saying, there was a bunch of Detroit fans too, which was cool. Always like to see other fans represented. You know, it's fun. It's fun. It's all for fun, right? So it's cool to see that. Jess, parking is at $40, dude. It's insanity.
Yeah.
I got a new hat, but dude, 60 bones for a cap, you know, whatever.
I mean, hey, bro, we gotta pay off that Shohei contract somehow, man. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, dude.
Like, they gotta get our money somehow, and this is the price we pay fans.
They were selling a John Suhu photo of Freddie's walk-off.
Yeah. Oh, that's sick.
We were just checking it out, dude. 2,200 big ones for a print of it. All right, I mean, assuming it's the original. It's got to be the original. But, I mean, it's badass, but I'm like, dude, if you got that kind of cheddar – please buy one for the pod. I'll hang it right here, and you can send it to us. It'd be incredible. We'll say your name at the end of every podcast. Just a wonderful, you know, opportunity for anyone with the money.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll hold off, but maybe if this pod takes off, we'll get some good merch. We'll get some good memorabilia for the
it
background.
It was packed from, you know, first pitch to freaking the ninth inning. It was really impressed. I was impressed with LA, dude. Very diverse. A lot of Japanese people out there. Met some, like, people that flew in from Japan at Philippe's before the game. There's this one dude. He was in line, just started talking to us. He was by himself using the translator app. Was like, dude, I saw freaking the game last night. Mookie's walk-off. It was incredible, dude. It was fucking – it was cool, man. I don't know. Yeah. It was just really rad to see, like, LA – buzzing about the Dodgers. It still had a, you know, that international feel. And I got to be honest, man, baseball has never felt bigger to me in my 30-something-odd years.
Yeah, I mean, it's – that's what you – that, you know, people say the Dodgers are hurting the game, but it seems like the Dodgers are kind of keeping the game interesting right now.
Yeah, man.
And they're looking. They're, you know, people are gonna get angry if they keep winning because it looks like they're gonna keep winning. And you know who else is making the league a little angry right now, Brandon?
Who's that, brother?
The Dodgers' opponent in the World Series, the New York Yankees, are in the news. Dude. They just played the Brewers. They won all three. They swept them. And there's much fuss being made about the bats that they were using. I'm sure you saw that there was a photo that went around of Jazz Chisholm. He was swinging a bat that almost looks like a bowling pin. It's fattened around the barrel and then it goes skinny towards the tip. That's what she said. And it basically it condenses the mass of the bat, like the hardest part of the bat, into the barrel area or to the area where the hitter makes the most contact. So these are actually customizable. So like Anthony Volpe's bat, for example, the barrel is the meaty part of the wood, that's what she said, was pushed down a little bit further towards where his where he hits the ball most. So the Yankees analytics department did a whole fucking research project, and they found where he makes the most contact. So they moved that part specifically to that part of the bat. So so his goes down a little bit further, where Jazz Chisholm's goes up a little bit higher. And I believe Cody Bellinger was also using it, and Paul Goldschmidt was also using it.
Wow.
Aaron Judge is not using it. But, yeah, so everybody's mad because the Yankees scored 36 runs. They're calling the Yankees cheaters, that they're ruining baseball. What do you think?
Jesse, I think that will give us the title of this episode of the podcast, dude, and that is The Evil Empire Strikes Back. They being the Yankees ownership, did not take that loss lying down. Apparently, they hired an MIT
Lenny.
Some guy, some MIT mathematician.
He was going to work at NASA and then just decided he wants to work in baseball.
That's way cooler. Yeah. But yeah, so he like worked on the aerodynamics and where these players are striking the bat most often. So that is now the sweet spot of the bat. And, you know, some people are really crying a foul on this. Jess, it was the Brewers pitcher. What was his name? What is his name?
Trevor McGill.
Trevor McGill. Yeah, he called the bats Bush League. Which I thought was, you know, which first of all, I just love that term. I just love that term. Another prominent name in sports media, Dave Portnoy, famously a Boston guy or a Phillies guy.
Boston.
Is he a Boston guy?
Yeah, Boston guy.
Yeah. Boston guy. Famously big Boston sports guy.
Slight conflict of interest here, but yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I'm just prefacing it with that. But, has been calling the Yankees just full-on cheaters, that this is absolute dog shit. Can't believe that the league allows this. And is just basically saying this is, you know, like big barrel bats from, like, you know, like, I don't even know what division.
Like wiffle ball has, anymore. I mean, Little League, they have, like, the big fat bats. There are, like, wiffle ball, you can get, like, the big fat bats. I mean, it just makes you feel like you're... There's less room. There's more room for error with those bigger bats, but
yeah. But I guess this is different, right? Because they're a little more oblong, like you were saying, bowling ball shaped. Just to throw a little caveat to it, today, as of recording, Sunday, March 30th, Twins catcher Ryan Jeffers was using a torpedo bat. So some people are expecting that this is going to proliferate the league, that this is going to be basically the new spider tech, sticky stuff, and that this is going to give hitters an unfair advantage. Portnoy was saying that this is bullshit, and both him and Brewers pitcher Tim McGill were basically quoted saying that it's going to be okay, though, because the Yankees are the ones doing it, so the league will allow it.
Yeah, well... Let's address that really quick, because this apparently there are like other players who have used these before. These companies will like go around and basically, you know, show these bats to players to get them to try it out. This has been already approved by the league, so the league has already said that this is okay. Otherwise, you know, you wouldn't be seeing these bats if they weren't approved by the league. And actually, what's interesting is that these bats are actually connected to Giancarlo Stanton's injury, because apparently he has basically tennis elbow, and both of his elbows are fucked up right now, and he's out for a little bit. There was a report he was using this bat last year. Nobody was talking about it, but he used it a little bit last year, and apparently in this report he blamed the bats why his elbow started to hurt, because it was changing the way that he was swinging, I think. And that might be part of the reason why this guy Lenny, who you know, came up with the concept for these bats, he's actually working for the Marlins now. He doesn't actually work for the Yankees anymore. So he might have actually gotten ousted by the Yankees, but I don't think that these bats are like a necessarily like new to players. I think players were already aware of it. We're just starting to see more players use it this year, and it just so happens to be the Yankees, who hit a bunch of home runs and who just, you know, exploded for 36 runs. I mean, they hit 9 home runs in game 2. Nestor Cortez came out, threw 3 pitches to his former team, and 3 home runs immediately right off the bat. It was
Goldschmidt. It was Goldschmidt. It was Bellinger
and Judge. Yeah, and you know, Judge again does not use the bat, but they did hit 9 home runs and they hit 15 in 3 games. So people are saying, "Oh, this is they're not even playing baseball anymore." This is
I believe Nestor Cortez allowed 5 home runs and 5 walks and is the first pitcher to achieve that feat while only facing 17 batters. I believe the record was 35 batters.
So we cut it in half. Yeah.
Brutal way to make your return back to the Bronx. And, you know, Jess, I'm really feeling silly already for predicting the Brewers to be league champions because they just got mollywopped. And you know what? The season is young, but boy, that was an ass-kicking that I don't think anybody expected.
No, they didn't. They didn't look good, and apparently the Yankees just beat them up a lot, though. I think they have – they just kind of had the Brewers' number over the past few years, any times that they've played. But, yeah, no, they got their asses kicked pretty bad.
Yeah, man. So some numbers I was looking at, speaking of torpedo bats, right? So the big culprits that everybody are talking about are Jazz Chisholm and Anthony Volpe, who are now notoriously using these torpedo bats. And Aaron Judge, their captain, is not. He basically came out and in so many words said that he won't be using that bat this season. And, you know, if he's doing this much damage without it, why change things? Which, you know, it's a hard thing to argue with.
Yeah, no, yes. He shouldn't. He should only use the torpedo bat in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because his normal bat doesn't work in the playoffs, so he might as well use it in the playoffs. Sorry, that was
Shooting the carcass of 2024 playoff Judge. Yeah. But in 12 at bats so far, Jazz Chisholm has 5 hits, 3 home runs, and 6 RBIs. Anthony Volpe in 12 at bats only has 2 hits, but they're both home runs. Aaron Judge, on the other end, in 11 at-bats, has 6 hits, 2 doubles, 4 home runs, and a whopping 11 RBIs in the first 3 games of the season. The numbers are saying that these bats aren't helping that much, you know, but I guess when you do make contact, the ball's going boom. I know that's a super small sample size, but and the other caveat to that is that not everybody's Aaron fucking Judge. So I guess if you give him a wiffle ball bat, he's still going to be cranking dingers out of here at 120, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look, here's – in my opinion, this is kind of a nothing burger. I think that people are just mad that it's the Yankees right now because, you know, people – you know, they don't like the Yankees. And if this was the Dodgers, I mean, we might legitimately see a total meltdown on social media. But because we haven't seen any of the Dodgers players using it yet, I feel like somebody's mad at another team. You know, that's nice. Take a little pressure off take a little heat off the boys in blue. But you know what? I think they like it. I think they like the fans coming after them. So
I agree. And just one last thing on the matter, dude. If it does come out that this bat has something to do with the injuries to Stanton, I think it's going to be a really shitty way to kind of put a cap on the end of his career. Cause I don't know how much ball he's got left in him. I don't know how much more is on that contract with the Yankees. I think it does end after this year, but,
I think it's 2 more years.
Is it 2 more? I'm not too sure, but you know, just getting to see that guy hit them damn prodigious or whatever you call them fucking dingers in the postseason. It's just beautiful. So just wishing you health, Giancarlo.
Yeah. So he's signed through 2027. So he's got 2 years after this. And then there's a team option in 2028. But I'm thinking that we're going to start seeing more players using the bat. And to be honest, I'm happy that the hitters are doing this. I think even though it's the Yankees, they're being proactive because for a long time, the pitchers have had such an edge. They have the ultimate edge in baseball. And, you know, they got away with so much with Spider Tech. You know, the rules changed for them. We're kind of finally starting to see more things switch over to the hitters. And by the way, like, don't we want more action in baseball? Isn't this why we were, like, making the bases bigger? Isn't this why we, you know, sped up the pitch count? To make the game more interesting and fun. And it's like, okay, they've moved the barrel up. So long as it's the same weight, it doesn't add like any sort of like noticeable unfair edge. So long as every other player is allowed to use it if they want to, I don't see the harm in it. Make the game more fun. If it means we get a couple more home runs a year because of it, I think it's great. So
I dig that. I like that take. Yeah. You know, as long as it's available to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. All the players are able to use it if they want to.
Yeah, like, because, you know, I don't think it's a big deal. Like, you know, everybody's got some different knob nowadays. I know Mookie's using that, like, axe handle thing. If somebody was like, no, you can't use that, I'd be like, what the fuck? Come on, just let him play. It's not that big of a deal. Brewers manager Pat Murphy on the torpedo bats, though, just was pretty funny. He said, my old ass will tell you this for sure. It ain't the wand, it's the magician. So I took that as him saying it's not the tool, it's the guy using it, right? So basically, you want to fucking complain about the bats, fine, but you should be missing the bats in the first place as a pitcher and not giving up 20 runs. It was a goddamn NFL score.
They got absolutely destroyed, and you're whatever. You can't complain when you do that. Before we move on topics, I actually just want to give a little shout out here. This is a shirt that I got from the Higher Path. It's a local dispensary in my area, so I wanted to give them a shout out because they have a cool little store. So if you're in the Valley on Ventura, go check out Higher Path.
Shouts out Jake Bauer real quick. It was a tough weekend to be a Brewer, but hey, he's leading the team in OPS at 1.7 and in ERA 0.00. Watch out, Shohei Ohtani. You're not the only NL two-way player looking for that NL MVP this year.
By the way, Max Muncy got on the board with a home run.
Whoa, dude.
Yep.
Wait a minute.
But it wasn't the Dodgers Max Muncy, Brandon.
Jesse, you son of a gun.
So Max Muncy homered before Max Muncy. So Max Muncy of the A's. He's a shortstop, I believe. He got the call up this year. He hit a home run before Max Muncy on the Dodgers. And if you get confused, all you have to do is you just identify each Max Muncy by their birthday. So if I'm trying to figure out the one who plays on the A's, I look up the one who was born on August 25th. And if I want to find the one on the Dodgers, I look up the one who was born on August 25th.
Jesse, they say history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And I don't know if Max Muncy rhymes, but if you say it four times fast, fuck it, it's cool. Yeah. I'm digging it. But yeah, I did not expect Max Muncy to hit a home run before Max Muncy this year. Mm-hmm. So that's a cool little tongue twister, I guess.
The Padres swept the Braves. Braves are, I don't know, man. I don't know what to make of that team. I think that they're going to be good once they get all their pieces back. But it seemed like the Padres kind of just had their way with them. Did they have a comeback win in that series?
They did. Jurickson Profar got a standing ovation, which was pretty cool. I don't know if he really did it enough to deserve it, but he was a heartbeat of that team last year.
By the way, they just swept them. They won 5-0 on Sunday Night Baseball, so now they're 4-0.
Wow, we got a fucking fight in the NL West, dude.
They got one hit by Nick Pivetta. In his Padres debut, Nick Pivetta threw 7 innings scoreless with one hit. The Braves had one goddamn hit.
Wow, dude. Let me ask you, Jess, just off this one series, do you think that we have been maybe underestimating the talent of this Padres team and overestimating the talent of this Braves team?
I definitely think that there's more concern. Definitely the Braves side of things surprises me a little bit more than the Padres side of things. I was, I'm expecting the Padres to be very good this year.
Nice.
And, you know, I think getting off to a good start is great for that fan base, because getting off to a bad start, could be bad for them, because that means they might consider trading, you know, Michael King or Dylan Cease. They might consider making a big deal, but No, I think the Braves looking this bad to start the year is definitely concerning.
Yeah, man. Another concerning one, the Pirates become the first team to be walked off three games in a row to the lowly Miami Marlins. Just the 2025 Pirates are the first team to lose their first three games by walk-off to start a season since the 1924 Pirates. So a legacy of infamy continues. Just as everybody drew it up to start the first series of the season, we got the Marlins in first in the NL East, followed by the Phillies, Nats, Mets, and Braves. Jess, in the NL Central, we got the Cardinals atop the division, 3-0, the Reds at 1-2, the Cubs at 2-4, Pirates 1-3, and the lowly Brewers off to an 0-3 start. And Jess, no surprise here to start that NL West. We got the Dodgers still chasing that 162-0, 5-0 to start the year. Padres off to a 4-0 start. Giants 2-1. Diamondbacks 2-2, and the Rockies 1-2. Jess, you want to take over on the American League side?
Yep, we got the Yankees lead the AL East. They're 3-0. Tampa Bay's in second, 2-1. Baltimore 2-2. Toronto 2-2. And Boston got off to a bad start against the Rangers. They won. They lost 3 of 4 games, so they're 1-3. I think that's where some of like the Boston frustration with the Yankees bats controversy is coming from, because everybody saw the Red Sox being like the hot team in the AL East to start the season, and they came in and they kind of got beat up a little bit by the Rangers. It was kind of a little bit of a bummer of a wake-up call for them, and the Yankees just come in and absolutely blow the Brewers and drop dick on the Brew Crew.
Yeah, and brother,
I think that's where some of the frustration is coming from here, is that the Red Sox didn't look as good as everybody was expecting them to. You know, Rafi Devers had like an awful series. I think he struck out like 13 or 8
times.
Like over 10 times for sure he struck out in the
crazy.
And like Trevor Story is like 1 for 12. So they've gotten off to a bad start offensively. The Cleveland Guardians lead the AL Central. They are 2-1. Royals in second, 1-2. It's a lot of bad records in the Central right now.
Yeah.
Royals 1-2, White Sox 1-2, Twins 0-3, Tigers 0-3. So it's a lot of bad records right now over there. Kind of the opposite in the AL West. Rangers lead the show. They're 3-1. Astros in second, 2-1. Angels in second, 2-1. They took 2 of 3 from the White Sox. Athletics, Brandon's American League West champion Athletics, are 2-2, and the Mariners are 2-2. The boy, but this is crazy about the Astros, though. Their run, they only gave up 5 runs in 3 games. So they're pitching. They pitched really well. They only scored 6. So their offense looked a little rough there in that opening series against who did they play? They played who did they play? I was just looking at it. The Mets.
That's right.
They took 2 or 3 against the Mets. And, for the Mets, Juan Soto came up in game 1 with a chance to tie or take the lead in the 9th inning against Josh Hader, and he struck out. So
yeah, people were really celebrating that, but he did have that home run.
Then he homered the next day. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty sad.
And they won 2 of 3. So,
which is pretty good.
Yep. So, hey, but either way, baseball is so hot in the streets, Brando. It's back. It's better than ever. And the Braves are in town tomorrow to play the Dodgers. So we got a series. Is it 3-game or 4-game? I didn't actually look at that.
I didn't either, now that you mentioned.
It is. I'll tell you right in a second. So they play tomorrow. And then they play Wednesday and then Thursday. Sorry, guys. So it's only a 3-game series. So tomorrow we got Grant Holmes versus Tyler Glasnow making his season debut for the Dodgers. So
love that.
Should be a good one. Tune in.
Love that. Jess, before we get out of here, I got one last question for you. In our way too early of the year predictions, we were guessing some teams to make the playoffs. What playoff team from 2024 is looking like they're going to miss the dance this year? And what team that didn't make it last season is looking like they are due to break into October baseball this year?
I think the Atlanta Braves are definitely that. If I were to overreact to one series for a playoff team, I would say the Braves. They did not look good. And one team that did not make the playoffs that I think could make it this year would be the Texas Rangers. And I think that's a pretty easy one. Yep.
Yeah, I really think you're right about the Rangers being in and the Braves being out. But I am going to go a different route. I think seeing the A's offense be able to battle against the Seattle Mariners pitching staff on opening weekend on the road and take a series split, I think it is very indicative of the fight in these guys. And I think that they're a kind of a man without a country, right? So I think right now I'm thinking that those A's can get into the dance this October. It's not my prediction of winning the West, but I definitely think they're a wild card contender.
Yeah, and also to your point about that, I do think that there's an element of that where it's psychological, because I think that the team is kind of coming in with some juice because of the fact that their ownership actually spent some money to keep the team together, to go get a free agent. They went out and traded for Jeffrey Springs. They signed Luis Severino. They extended Langeliers, and they extended Brent Rooker. I think that it just makes the team feel a little bit more like, okay, let's try to do this. And I think it helps. They're only 2-2. They're obviously off to this is very early, but I agree. I like the way the A's looked. They fought hard.
And then, and then to miss out on the playoffs, I was going to say Braves myself. I do think that there's still just a lot of ifs in the tank with Acuna coming back, what version of him you're going to get. Same thing with Strider. For me, it is looking like the Braves right now early on.
Yeah, they gotta find a way to be like 500 by the time Acuna and Strider come back, because they could be in for a rude awakening if that's the case. By the way, Mariners, you didn't score more than 4 runs a game against the A's. The other 3 games, you scored 0, 2, and 2.
Crazy.
Come on, guys. Like, let's get this together. Anyways. Brandon, this was a fun one. We are we'll be back probably on Wednesday. Maybe we'll do midweek episodes, and then we'll do like for series recaps, and then series predictions, and then do like a weekly recap on Sundays. Maybe we'll start doing that more. I don't know.
I like that. This feels good. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this has been another episode of Deferred Collusion. Again, our editor-in-chief, Jesse, the Romanian Roe, he's relentless. He's dogged in his pursuit of content creation. We might be putting out a little opening day blog-type post about just, the sights and sounds of Dodger Stadium from my perspective. And Jesse also said a little bit about our scheduling that we're going to try and get out for you fine folks. So, again, thank you so much for joining us. Like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Share with your friends. And, enjoy some baseball. Let's go. Let's yell at some umps. What do you guys say, huh?
Let's do it. All right, boys. Boys and girls. Sorry, I don't mean to be discriminatory. I'm going to leave because this is just awkward. I'm sorry. Now I've ruined it.
You ruined it, dude. Oh, that.